I'd like to start with some food biography. Who did the cooking in your family when you were growing up, and what kind of meals were served?
Well, when I grew up in a comfortable middle-class family, and that was heavens in the teens, and at that time there was plenty of help. So we always had a cook and even an upstairs maid. So, and my mother cooked on Thursdays, and she could cook, not very much. She could do biscuits and some kind of a cheese dish. So I didn't have any background of cooking, though I always enjoyed eating. My grandmother, who came from Illinois, was a great cook. She made donuts and crullers and all kinds of things. It was good, plain food, though.
A lot of girls learn how to cook by being in the kitchen with their mothers. Since mm-hmm. you had a cook in the house, did you hang out with the cook and learn from her?
No. All I did was eat. I didn't do any cooking at all. Till I met Paul. Then I found that he had grown up with a family very much interested in food, and I realized I'd have to do something about it. And so, I had become more interested myself, but I'd never done any before.
So when you got married, you needed to really cook with style.
So I started out, I used Gourmet magazine and Joy of Cooking, I believe, and that we were living in Washington, D.C. That was just after World War II. And after about a year and a half of marriage, we were sent over to Paris, France. And I remember our first meal, we had our old blue Buick that we took over on the boat. We had our first meal at Rouen, near where Joan of Arc met her fiery end, and we had an absolutely marvelous lunch, kind of food I'd never had before. We had oysters and chablis, and we had a sole meuniere and a few things like that, and I was hooked. I never turned back.
What did you do to start learning once you were in Paris?
Well, I immediately, as soon as we got settled, I had just Paul and a nice pussycat, I enrolled in the Cordon Bleu. And that was about 1950, I guess, early 1950. And at that time, middle-class people did not cook much. And all the American wives thought I was nutty for cooking and serving and shopping and doing everything like that. And we happened to have a friend who had a mutual French friend called Simone Beck, or Simca. She was in the same position, loved to cook, very much interested in it. None of her friends liked to. And we met, and it was an instant take because I had had no one to talk to, and neither did she. And though there was a women's gastronomical club called Le Cercle des Gourmets that met twice a month, and they had a chef, and by the time I was asked to join, these were older ladies about in their 70s, and they just came for lunch. They had great big hands like bananas. And loved to eat. And so Simca and her friend Louisette and I always got there at 9 o'clock, so we really had a private lesson all the time with them. That was really my introduction to the French way of life. And then having met Simca and then some art historian friends, we really were lucky in getting right into French life, and we luckily didn't have to do anything diplomatically much because we were down in the middle ranks. So we lived in Paris 4.5 years, or almost 5 years. And that was where I got my start. And then we had some American friends who wanted to do cooking, but they didn't speak any French, and they knew that Simca and I were cooking. And they said, well, why don't you give us lessons? So we started our cooking school the next day. And we learned, of course, a great deal about cooking through teaching. I will recommend that to anybody. That's the best way to learn once you've gotten a good basic start.
And that school was the now famous Les Trois Gourmands.
Les Trois Gourmands. It was a small school. We had only 6 to 8 people because we wanted complete participation. And then we had lunch. We thought one of the best and cheapest lunches in Paris, where our husbands all came, and we had wine and so forth. And then we started doing our book, because Simca and Louisette had already started a book on French cooking for Americans, and their collaborator, luckily, and maybe I put the kibosh on him, died, which pleased me very much indeed, so that I joined with them, and then we really redid the whole thing, and it took 9 years to write.
Julia Child is my guest in her new public television show, Dinner at Julia's, begins Mondays at 8 on public television here in the Delaware Valley on Channel 12. Were there any pretensions in French cooking that you rejected when you started teaching and when you started doing your television series in 1963?
I don't know what you mean by pretensions, because French cooking is very basic indeed, and it would be more of a taking out of elaborations. And then also, when we were there, it was just shortly after the war, and there were no kitchen conveniences at all. There were the most home kitchens were really quite primitive, because they had a maid of all work do the cooking, and it's amazing to me how they managed to produce such good food out of those little tiny ovens. But they did not have electric mixers. And so, I mean, you did everything by hand, but then they had enough help. They still had help then.
I guess maybe what I'm getting at is that a lot of Americans tended to be very pretentious about their interest in French food.
I think that's because they didn't know anything much about it. But one of my interests was in taking all that kind of fol-de-rol out of French cooking and taking the scare out of it, and to show people that it was just really good, basic, classical cooking. And I still feel that today, that if you're really going to learn how to cook, you should learn the French techniques, because they're all-encompassing. They take every facet of food, just about. And if you learn the basics there, then you can do just anything. So, and I think also it's terribly important to develop the taste of what is good food supposed to taste like. And that's one thing, you know, you might have heard of this American Institute of Wine and Food, which has been started out on the West Coast. That's what we're interested in, quality. We're very much interested in manufacturers and hotels and mass cooking. No, what's food supposed to taste like? And the same with the wines. And that's what this Institute of Wine and Food is all about, because we need it very much in this country, I think.
Have you ever lived in a place where you couldn't get the kind of ingredients you wanted, even good fresh vegetables to work with?
Yes, we have. I think that in that case, you just have to work with what you have. And if you know enough about cooking, you can make something edible out of it. Norway, for instance, we were stationed there, and sometimes things weren't of the best, but the things that were good were extremely good. I think you've just got to do with what you have.
Have you ever hired a cook for your house since you're busy professionally cooking?
No, no. And once in a while we've had a caterer, if we've had to have sort of a business party or something like that. But I've always done all the cooking and all the serving. Because one thing that I wanted to do in our books was to make it like the average American person who does all the cooking and serving, so we always have what you can do ahead and where you can stop and so forth. I've just re-edited volumes 1 and 2 of Mastering, because volume 1 was written, you know, and came out in 1961. That was, I call it BFP, or Before Food Processor, which has made such an enormous amount of difference in a lot of the things that you would consider very old cuisine and impossible to do, like fish mousses and canals. With the food processor, plump, it's done like that. And I think that's been as important a change in cooking as the electric mixer. When you read an old recipe for a cake, say from Madame Saint-Ange, or a Genoise cake, you'd have mixed things up, then you'd put in an egg and beat for 20 minutes, put in another and beat. But then in those days, you'd have a kind of a little old messy helper that would do it for you.
What's your typical eating day like?
Unfortunately, we have to watch our weight, so that we have mostly fruit and tea for breakfast and a light lunch, and then a nice dinner. But I do all the cooking myself, unless we go out or invite it out. Then I'm doing a lot of experimenting, so we have to try out. I'm going to be on the Phil Donahue show in a little while, and I've had to try out a chicken breast recipe. So Paul has been eating chicken stuffed chicken breasts for the last 2-3 days, but they're good, with artichokes and garlic.
Food has certainly changed a lot since you started cooking and teaching. Television has changed too. Can you compare what it's like to do a TV show now with what it was like in 1963 when you started?
Well, in 63, of course, it was all black and white. And we did ours on location, because when we started doing ours, the Channel 2 in Boston burnt to the ground. Mm. And so we did it in a model kitchen of the electric company. and we had to bring it up, everything up three floors, even during the snowstorms. Then it was all black and white, and we managed to do four shows a week. I don't know how, because now we do one a week, and that seems like a lot. And then I remember vividly when color first came in. It was about 65 or 66, and our producer-director, Russell Morash, who was our first director then, and is the one who's in our new shows, had a black and white camera next to a color camera. And there was, they had a chemical show and an art show and a little cooking show all for about 5 minutes. And it was like night and day, like a strawberry tart in black and white is all gray. And then we also had a veal stew, which was sort of other kinds of gray. But when it was in color, you could see exactly the difference in the meat and the onions and the mushrooms. And, of course, the strawberry tart was a brilliant color. We were so impressed, we immediately went out that afternoon and bought a color television set. But I'm particularly interested now, too, since we began, that young people are going into the food profession and educated young people, which I think is fine. That's not true in Europe, where it's still a blue-collar business, because the kids go in from a peasant background and they're 11 or 12 and they get wonderful facility with their hands, but they haven't had an education, so very often they're not interested in promoting the profession.
Your TV shows and your books have had an enormous influence on Americans. What do you think that influence has been?
Well, I think it's been all to the good. For one thing, it has influenced people to go into this very interesting profession, because you can be your own boss. It's not just going in and being a restaurant chef, which is very difficult and demanding, but you have food writing, you have recipe developing, you have experimentation and all kinds of things, food editorship. And I think that having opened up that field, and when we're talking nowadays so much about the difficulty of finding employment, if you're a good cook, you can get a job. There are 80,000 openings per year, according to Parade magazine.
Which you're a
and it's fun, yes. But and it's great fun, and we've had a wonderful time doing our television show. We're just like a great big family. It was fascinating. We have a food designer and an executive chef, all of whom are friends. We've worked together for years, and we just have a great deal of fun developing recipes.
Do you get dinner invitations to friends or colleagues' houses, or are they afraid and intimidated to invite you over?
No, nobody who knows us and is ever afraid. And why should they be? I think if anyone's interested in cooking, they'd like to have someone else who's interested come over. And we're always hungry, so that we're very good guests to have. And that's, I think so many people do cooking nowadays anyway.
There's been a real influx of ethnic restaurants and therefore ethnic recipes in America. How has that affected your eating and cooking?
Doesn't affect me. I just do what I like. And if I happen to like something ethnic, I'll try it out. And if I don't, I won't. But I think that's the richness of this country, in that we have so many influences from all over. And we don't have to stick to one kind of a tradition. You like doing the sautéed chicken, you can use Chinese black beans and Japanese mushrooms and Mexican hot sauce and anything that we want. As a matter of fact, we really invented nouvelle cuisine in America, because the French were so held down by tradition that until that nouvelle cuisine came along, nobody would dare do it. It was not done. It would not be done to put soy sauce on a leg of lamb or something like that.
So you like that kind of eclecticism?
Yeah, which I think is marvelous. It can go too far, and that's why it's so important to have a very serious attempt to develop one's taste. And the nice thing about it is you can only develop your taste by eating food and drinking wine. Then another thing, too, and again, in professionalism, I'm very much interested in the International Association of Cooking Schools, because for a long time cooks have been opening little cooking schools and charging $50, and they really don't know what they're doing. But now, with the Association of Cooking Schools, if people are serious about it, they're going to have to get a certificate of professional ability, and they'll have tests, so that if I come to you, I know that you're going to teach me how to cut up an onion properly and how to make the basic things right.
Do you ever?
It's very important, I think, that we who are in the profession develop it as a profession, and it's up to us to do it.
Do you ever eat hamburgers?
I certainly do. I'm very happy. We came down to Washington and had a horrible lunch on the plane of kind of awful mystery flu food and garlic powder, and I would far rather go and have a hamburger in one of the good recognized chains, because then you know exactly what you're getting. I'm very happy to eat anything that's well cooked. I don't care what it is.
You don't order special when you go on an airplane?
Whoever thinks of doing that. Would it be any good anyway?
I don't know. I've heard people recommend it.
I doubt if it would be any better. If they can't do an ordinary meal well, they couldn't do a special meal well.
Do you eat out a lot? And
to some extent.
What do you look for in a restaurant when you do?
Well, first thing, does it smell good when you go in? Or does it smell of stinky fat? Or does it smell of garlic powder? I think it makes a great deal of difference on how it smells. Like sometimes you can go in a good French restaurant and you can tell that they've been simmering mussels in white wine and shallots, and that's a lovely perfume as you come into a restaurant. If you go into an Italian one and you'll smell onions and good olive oil and garlic sautéing together. That's a good omen, I think. I think it's got to smell good.
Do you ever tour the kitchen?
Yep, frequently. If I like the restaurant. If I don't, I don't. We always like to know the chefs and so forth, the restaurants that we like. We don't go out that much, though.
I don't imagine you'd need to. You have such good food at home.
Well, it's fun to go out. We've just come back from France, and we ate at about 5 or 6 fancy restaurants. I have to go over there and see what they're up to.
Do chefs recognize you and waiters recognize you when you're eating out?
Here in this country they do usually, which is nice. And then if they have any good food, we might get it. You never know.
There was a sketch, I wonder if you've ever seen this, about you on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes, we have a cassette of it. It's very funny.
Was it John Belushi who
yes,
played it?
It was.
And
yes.
One of the things he does is keep nipping at the wine as he's preparing the ingredients.
I once drank some tomato juice on the air after you squeeze the tomato juice, and that's gotten to be that I picked up the bottle and swigged the wine, which I would never think of doing. Well, in our new shows, which is nice, we've got visiting chefs. We have 13 shows, and so we have a different visiting chef for each show. Unfortunately, not one from Philadelphia, because we only had 13, and we had one from Washington, one from New York already picked, so we couldn't cluster the East Coast too much. But we have a fine black chef from New Orleans who does a beautiful crayfish bisque. And we have 2 women, Sally Dar from New York, the La Tulipe, and Leslie Rice from Chicago. Then we have some Americans and some French. So, and I'm delighted that we have that. And each one of them, we've said to them, we want you to do something that's really exciting and people will just be thrilled over it. It doesn't have to be any kind of a housewife's recipe, but a really great thing. And so we're very pleased with that.
Let's just get back to the Saturday Night Live sketch a minute. Since you have a tape, I assume you think it was very funny.
Oh, yes. Didn't you think it was funny?
Oh, I thought it was great, yeah.
So we thought it was terribly funny.
Good. Okay. Do you think the role of men and women in chefdom and cooking has changed since you started?
Well, I think women are finally coming in, being much more accepted. They're not accepted very much in France. They still, but women I don't think have done a great deal. There's a great talk about great women chefs, but there are not very many of them, and there are not very many in the kitchen. It just hasn't been something that women have taken up very much.
Do you think
a little bit. But I think here, though I noticed that, like at Lutèce, he doesn't want any women in the kitchen. But out in Chicago, Jean Blanchet, who's got that wonderful restaurant, Le Français, he has some women. So they're gradually coming in. But often it's difficult. So you're quite small, and you might find it difficult because the boys might be pinching you, and you'd have to button up your blouse and so forth.
Oh, it's already buttoned.
But I think that it's coming.
Did you face any kind of discrimination or anything when you started?
No, well, I'm not in competition with anybody, so I've just worked every now and then. Then I'm big, so nobody's going to fuss around with me too much. No, I never have run into any discrimination of any type being a woman. But then I'm of an older generation than you, so I never ran into any trouble. You might have run into it in the radio, did you?
Well, in the very early days of public radio when I started, there were some strange circumstances. Mm-hmm. But since then, I've considered public radio a real oasis.
Yeah, well, I think it is.
As far as women go. I think if you're teaching math or science or something like that, mm-hmm. you can tell pretty quickly who are the gifted people and who are mm-hmm. going to have trouble mm-hmm. mastering the concepts. Is it that way when you're teaching cooking?
It is very much. You can find that some people just haven't any hand facility whatsoever. I think it may be because they weren't trained as young. I was trained in the Montessori system when you did an awful lot of hand work. And I think some people can't stir, they can't cut, and they can't, you know, even beating something, they're just not used to using their hands. For them, it's very difficult.
So you have
I think also you have to have a real interest. You have to love eating and love food, and you want to create something wonderful because you want to eat it yourself. I think that's very important. And you have to be, if you're going into teaching a restaurant work, it's very hard work. You have to have good stamina and be good, tough, strong person and love to work. You have to love all the dog work. You have to like the whole thing.
Which do you like more, cooking or eating?
Both. I like both. I think they're twin things. I couldn't make a choice. But it's a wonderful career, but you have to love it. That it calls on all of your creativity, intelligence, memory, hand facility. It calls on everything that you have, and you still won't have enough.
Is there a meal that stands out in your mind as being the most exciting to eat or most challenging to make?
Probably the next one that's coming up.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Very nice to be with you. I hope you'll enjoy our new series.
I'm sure I will. Do you want to say a few more words about it?
Well, it's very different. It's not like anything else we've ever done before. It's very fast-paced. And the fact that it's a dinner party thing, but we go out and show people where the things come from, because a lot of people don't know. I didn't know myself how artichokes were grown, for instance. And then we come back, and I do the main course, and then we have the visiting chef who does either, whichever he prefers, the first or the thing. And it's wonderful to see professionals work. And then we have a visiting winemaker who describes what he's bringing and why and so forth. And then we have the dinner party itself. So it's lively and fun. It's good entertainment as well as teaching. And we're not having any recipes, because you're supposed to look at what's being done and not bother about whether it's one tablespoon or two.
Well, I'll look forward to the show, and I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Good. Okay.